from WCVB Channel 5 Podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Take 5 Podcast. Our guest today, Tony Maserati of 98.5, the Sports Hub, and also, Ellen, a former WCVB Channel 5 intern. That's right, he interned for Mike Lynch. Now, I don't think it was like Succession. Those of you that have seen that show, I don't think they turned him into any sort of, you know, human furniture or anything like that. But he was an intern for Lynchy, so that foreshadowed his career. Have you had any internships that foreshadowed your career?
I definitely have not. My internships, I've done a lot of them. The weirdest one being just photoshopping old photos in someone's basement. I still, to this day, could not tell you what he was. I think he was a photographer of some sort.
Okay.
Luckily, I got into a car accident and couldn't go back to that internship.
I don't think anybody's ever said, luckily, I got into a car accident.
Well, you know, you gotta look on the bright side of things sometimes. I was okay. The car, not so much.
Okay. Well, yeah. It sounds like your internship was not as good as Tony Maserati's here at Channel 5. So Tony Maz, part of the Channel 5 family. We'll find out what he has to say about the Celtics season ending, where the Patriots are at, and of course, the Red Sox and their disastrous season. That's coming up next.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
All right, as promised, we're joined by the one and only Tony Maserati of Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Maz, what's up?
You got to set higher standards, Chris. And if I'm the one and only, you got to aim higher.
Well, you know, we decided that we would go with all the former WCVB interns we could find.
Good strategy. It's a long list, you know. Seriously, it's like there were a bunch of us that worked there at the same time that are still in the business. So
who did you intern with, just out of curiosity?
So Carl Ravitch at ESPN, he was there same time I was. Paul Lucy, who now produces the Celtics games for NBC Sports Boston. Matt Smith, who's the director of communications or the media operation basically for the Patriots. So he was there. There were more. Now I'm forgetting them. What's her name? She used to work at Michelle Bonner used to work at ESPN for a while. Yep, Michelle was there. She was another one. It's a long, distinguished list, Chris.
And what did you guys have to do? Like get coffee for Lynchy, or what did being an intern in those days entail? Actors, yeah. I don't know if you've seen Succession, but there's a scene in that show where one of the vice president guys makes some of the underlings act as a footstool, a human footstool. Was that part of what you guys had to do for Lynchy?
Yeah, it wasn't quite that bad, but I went on more than a few dinner runs, I can tell you that. But it was good. It was a good experience for me at the time.
Yeah, I know. I can imagine. It's nice to bring you back to your roots. All right, so I want to start here with the Celtics, because I'm sure you have some opinions on this. Obviously, they're eliminated from the playoffs on Sunday evening. They lose to the Miami Heat. They dropped the series in six, really destroyed in the fourth quarter. They were up 96-90, Maz, with about 9 minutes to go, and a 26-6 run just completely changed the game. When you look at the Celtics and their season, how do you classify it? How do you quantify it? Was this a massive disappointment or just a slight underachievement?
Well, so I don't know if I call it a massive disappointment. I leave hyperbolic terms like that to my partner. The series was disappointing. The way they played in the series, I thought was really disappointing because I think they're better than they showed, and they cracked. And in the fourth quarter, they just had massive breakdowns. There's no way around that. I thought the end of game six illustrated it as much as any we saw, because as soon as Miami crept up to about seven, all of a sudden it felt like the Celtics were looking at the clock and they started chucking up three-pointers. And it just, then the game just got away from them at that stage. Whereas if they had gone down, maybe made a two, gotten a stop, drawn a foul, now all of a sudden maybe you're within one possession and you still get time on the clock and you're right back in it. And I just think they really kind of fell apart there. Now, beyond that part of it, I do have some personnel concerns on the roster. And I think, Bam Adebayo exposed them in the middle in that series. That's a big one. And I also think when you look at all the shooters Miami has, who do the Celtics have that is at all like that? And when I say, you know, Jason Tatum's a good shooter, don't get me wrong, and I'm okay with putting Tatum in that group. I'm not quite sure Brown shoots well enough to be considered like a hero or even a, you know, or Duncan Robinson, who's, you're not going to find many guys in the league like Robinson anyway. But it feels to me like all those Miami guys can shoot 40%, like, or have the ability to shoot 40%. And I'm not sure the Celtics have quite that collection of shooters. And that's another thing I worry about.
Yeah. And I think that that really showed up, Maz, in the fourth quarter. You look at what happened with Miami. They shot 67% from the field in the fourth quarter. The Celtics shot 37%, including 2-for-14 for three. And this is the way I feel about the Celtics. I feel like the Celtics are sort of like that preening, swaggering heavyweight fighter who has a knockout punch, and they just keep trying to throw knockout punches, and then they can't believe it when they get to round 10 and the guy's still standing and they don't know what to do. And they sort of just keep going for the knockout punch. I thought in the fourth quarter, I mean, 2-for-14 on three, they had a stretch there, Maz, six straight possessions. It was Jason Tatum trying to throw a terrible alley-oop to Jaylen Brown. The other five possessions were all threes. And I'm watching the game and I know what's going to happen. And I'm watching it here at Channel 5 in the sports office. And I'm saying to my colleagues, they're hunting threes. They're looking for the knockout punch or the home run there to get back into the game.
Well, right. Yeah. And look, to take your analogy further with the, you know, with the heavyweight boxer who's going for the knockout, like the Deontay Wilder of the NBA, if that's sort of how you look at it. All you get to the 10th round and not only is the other guy still standing, but you're behind on points. And so you look up and go, well, wait a minute, how did I get down this much? Now I have to go for the knockout because I just haven't paid attention to all the other stuff along the way. So to me, that's what, you know, now look, I think it's a product of inexperience, I hope. I do think they have, you know, they got to clean up some things on the roster because I'm not sure a Smart, Brown, and Tatum all work together. They should, I think, if Brown were, or rather if Smart were willing to accept his role. But it feels to me like, you know, Marcus Smart last night took the second most shots on the team.
22 shots. He was also 1-for-6 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and I think,
overall,
Chris, I think he went 2-for-his final 10. So at one point in the game, if I'm not mistaken, I think Smart was 6-for-12, and he was 4-for-8 from three-point land. And he finished 8-for-22.
Yes.
So you know, I look at that and say, well, now there's a guy who thinks he's a shooter and he's not. So he keeps chucking him up there. And the reality is at that stage, he should be facilitating. Marcus Smart should be in the range of 12 to max 15 shots a game. I mean, I think that's the kind of player that he is. And if he doesn't recognize that, I think that's something they really got to drill into their head. But really, to me, the big thing is the guy in the middle. You know, they just got devoured by Adebayo in this series. They had no answer for him. Daniel Tice isn't good enough. Robert Williams might have the athleticism, but he's not experienced enough and certainly not, you know, knowledgeable enough at this stage of his career. And I don't blame him for that. And Enes Kanter's not athletic enough. So, you know, to me, there's a – I don't know how you solve that because I don't think this guy's going away. This is another one you look at sort of like Giannis last year, and I know that some of these guys could change teams. But whether it's Giannis or Adebayo or, you know, the Celtics got to come up with an answer in the middle
I agree with you.
This is a long-term problem now. So hopefully it's Robert Williams. We'll see, but I don't know that you can bank on it, Chris.
You know, it's a good point. And I want to pick up on something you keep saying, which is, you know, they're young and hopefully they'll grow. And you're right. Tatum and Brown are young and they're still developing players. But I go back to this, Maz, and this sort of ties into what we're talking about. They've lost in this round 3 times in 4 years. Now, the first time that happened, Brown was a rookie. You know, Tatum wasn't even on the team. But to me, I'm just not sure you have the right mix. Like, I feel like this is a classic Danny Ainge collection of talent and not a team. In the LeBron-less Eastern Conference, everybody going back to last year when Kyrie was here was anointing the Celtics. They were supposed to be the next team. They were supposed to be the Golden State Warriors East. Now, this is 2 years in a row. They haven't gotten to the finals. I don't think growth alone is going to do this. I think they need to change the mix. And you might end up with a less talented roster, but a better team. I would look at a guy like Miles Turner in Indiana, and if I have to move Gordon Hayward, if I have to move Marcus Smart, if I have to move one of those guys to get back a halfway decent stretch big like that, I would do that. I think I might be less talented, but be able to get more out of the talent that I have.
Well, so look, I don't disagree with you. I think, you know, I think they got to do something in there. And, you know, I was just going to ask you whether you would break it up. And
I would break it up.
Yeah, it comes down to three guys. To me, this is about Tatum, Brown, and Smart. To me, Smart, you know, Smart's the guy I lean toward moving. I think you could get something for him. A lot of teams would take him. He's a valuable guy in some, you know, in some ways. And he's got a place on a good team. But I just don't see, you know, if he thinks he's a scorer, it's not going to work. Every time I see him chuck up a three and he gets up close to 20 shots, I start losing my mind.
Yeah, and you go back to game five that they won. I thought he played a great game. He only took 9 shots. Just for the series here, looking at Marcus Smart and what he was able to do from three-point range. Overall, the Celtics shoot 34.1. Jason Tatum didn't shoot well from three, 30.8%. But Smart, 31.9%. He just keeps jacking him up. And, you know, I've been critical of him. Obviously, they had the blowout, or blow up, I should say, after game two in the locker room. You know, that's something that I feel like as a veteran guy, I know he's emotional and I know he's competitive, but the Celtics act like he's the only guy in the league who's competitive, and that excuses that sort of type of behavior. I do give him a lot of credit, Maz. I thought he was a really stand-up guy. I thought he was very thoughtful and he faced the music after last night's loss. But I just think at the end of the day, this idea of, you know, trying to be the Warriors and running out all these wings. You know, the reason the Warriors work is because Draymond Green knows when he has to step up and score 30 points and when he has to step aside and just score 6. And I don't think Marcus Smart has that. I just don't think the chemistry is right. And I'm tired of hearing how young they are, because Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo are young too. And really, it was those guys, not Jimmy Butler, who carried the day down the stretch for Miami. So I think it's more about chemistry, continuity, fit, which I put more on Ainge than Stevens, but there's something about the mix of this team that, to me, they're just not going to be able to maximize the talent on paper.
Well, yeah, look, I don't know that that's all that debatable anymore. I mean, it is, as you said. Now, look, when you say Miami's got some younger guys, Hero, and I don't know if you said, who you said? With
Bam
Hero,
Adebayo.
Duncan Robinson, or Adebayo. You know, Adebayo's been in the league a few years, but those guys also aren't being asked to lead. And so, you know, that's Jimmy Butler's team. And they also have Dragic there to sort of provide some stability. And I just don't know if the Celtics have that.
Well, they have Kemba, don't they? They have Kemba. And they're supposed to have Smart. I'm not saying Smart's Jimmy Butler, but the idea that they don't have any veterans, like, they have Kemba.
So that's fair. I just don't look at Kemba in that light. And I think Kemba is, you know, he's another guy that, to me, has some limitations on the floor. And I think that that affects his ability to sort of get in. I don't want to say get in the face of other guys, but to lead other guys. So maybe it's a personality thing, Chris. But to me, Butler's a leader. And so, and also, I think his contributions in this series, instinctively you look at them on paper and you say, well, he wasn't that great. But then you watch the games and you say, he kind of is the glue, along with Dragic, that keeps it all together. And so Butler's smart enough to not force shots, and he knows when he has to get other guys involved. And I think he's understood that it's got to work as a unit. Otherwise it doesn't do any good. And now in that league, I think that often comes when you hit your 30s or close to it. So the question is, how do the Celtics fix that? They just can't keep going back, because, and look, I'm a bit of a traditionalist in this way. I'm not saying you need Hakeem Olajuwon in the middle, because that guy is a rarity. The players like that just aren't that common. But you got to be able to protect the rim.
Yeah. The other part that's frustrating for me about this, Maz, is it just seemed like the yellow brick road was rolled out for them to get to the Eastern Conference final. You didn't have to worry about Giannis Antetokounmpo. This was a year, you know, Kevin Durant wasn't healthy.
Like the Bruins last year.
Yeah, like, exactly. Great analogy. Yes, like the Bruins last year, dodging the Lightning and the Capitals and the Penguins and all those teams. And it's just hard for me to see them squander this opportunity. You know, I like that Miami team. I think maybe we sold them short. But I look at the Celtics and I feel like, you know, it's what Jaylen Brown said after the game.
I think we play hard. Obviously, we feel like we underachieved. We had a really good group, young group, a talented group. That's only going to do nothing but improve. Once again, it stings, but I'm still very, very proud of this group.
they underachieved, and that's, you know, difficult to swallow. And now it's a couple of years of that. So for me, look, the core is Tatum and Brown, and after that, everything else is fungible. And for me, that includes Kemba. Not a knock on Kemba, but, you know, he's in his 30s. I think this knee thing is not going away. It's going to be touch and go for the rest of his career. And you know how I feel about little guys. When they lose, we saw with Isaiah Thomas, if you lose just a little bit with an injury, as a little guy, your margin for error is very small in terms of ability to get to the rim and finish at the rim. And I think he might not be the same player going forward if this knee injury is something that's chronic.
In the early part of the series, it was Dragic. It was Walker on Dragic, and they went after him with Dragic. In the next two games of the series, he was on Hero, and they went after him with Hero. And then last night, I felt like they started going at Hayward. I thought Miami really attacked Hayward last night. And, you know, so the Celtics have some defensive weaknesses there, but the common denominator for four of those games was Kemba. And, you know, the Celtics need the extra scorer on the offensive end, particularly when Hayward's not at 100%. So I get why he's out there. But I just think if a guy like that has a big role on your team, there's a problem, unless you shoot like Steph Curry. I don't know. They got to do a little soul searching there. They got to figure out what they want to be and how they're going to get there. And because to me, if they're serious about mixing up that core, then I would start with Smart.
I give Gordon Hayward a pass. Our friend Gary Washburn, who we talked to down in the bubble here on the Take 5 podcast, had a report in the Boston Globe today that he actually had nerve damage in that ankle and basically needed two more weeks and just came back and played on one leg. So I know people upset about the layup he missed last night in the third quarter. I mean, he was out there just gutting it out, you know, just trying to be there for his teammates. So I'm not going to get on Gordon Hayward at this point. And my other thought is just watching Tyler Hero, Danny Ainge, please stop hoarding draft picks. If there's a guy you like, go get him. And I know they were surprised when Pat Riley took Hero one pick ahead, but they go into this draft, Maz, basically in the same spot. They have three first round picks. They have the Memphis pick, which is 14. They have their own first round pick, and they have Milwaukee's first round pick. They don't really have roster space for three players. If there's someone you like that you feel like can be a Tyler Hero, maybe it's Aaron Nesmith of Vanderbilt. If there's someone you like, just package the picks and go get them, you know, instead of waiting around and hoarding all these draft picks. Because I think Tyler Hero is the prime example that the NBA is not the NFL. Draft pick quantity alone does not have value. It's about quality. It's about who you get, not about how many draft picks you have.
Oh, no question. Look, and just quickly on those two things, I thought Hayward got worse as the series went. So, you know, to me, that speaks to something not being right. And let's be realistic. Even with a sprained ankle, nerve damage or no nerve damage, it's not a four-week injury. Not to play in the NBA, it's longer than that. It's closer to six, maybe even eight. So somewhere in that area, I thought he was going to be limited when he came back. And then just on Hero, quickly, if I said to you right now, you could trade Marcus Smart and get Tyler Hero, would you do it?
Are you kidding me? I trade five Marcus Smarts for one Tyler Hero.
Okay, so this is another thing I look at and I say, maybe we, you know, some of us, Chris, if you know who I'm talking about, some of us misevaluated the talent on the other side. And look, I didn't know Hero was this good either, but I think Miami has more talent than we give them credit for.
I would agree. All right, so I want to switch over to the Patriots. What are your feelings? Obviously, they get the win 36-20 on Sunday against the Las Vegas Raiders. To me, this was the typical Patriots win, Maz. I always say that the Patriots are kind of like Iceman from Top Gun. You know, they play ice cold. They wait until you get frustrated or bored, do something stupid, and then they got you. I didn't think this was a particularly impressive Patriots victory, but it was a vintage Patriots victory, I would say. So how are you feeling about the Patriots three games in?
So overall, look, I'm feeling pretty good. I, you know, 2-1 is what you'd expect or want them to be at this stage. I think we all would have conceded that they'd probably lose at Seattle. But I think that overall, it's looked a little bit better than we thought, especially after some of the reports from people like you in the preseason telling us how terrible they were. And so, look, the game yesterday, though, let's be honest, it would have told us a lot more about the Patriots if they lost it than if they had won it. And so they won the game, and I thought one of the real pivotal – first of all, the Patriots got a couple of breaks. The Raiders recovered that fumble.
Good point. You're right.
And then secondly, the Raiders get a score at the end of the half. Now they come down, and they miss a field goal. So if they kick the field goal, now it's 13-13. Game on. Here we go. Instead, they miss a 41-yarder. It's a chippy. The Patriots get on, get a touchdown. And now here you go. Horses left the barn, or starts to, and it's 20-10. I'm not saying the game was gone at that stage. I just thought that missed field goal was a huge, huge turning point.
I totally agree. Do you feel any differently about their passing attack now after watching yesterday? I mean, Newton, 17-28, threw a pick, 162. They just couldn't get guys open. He held the ball a lot. He's just sort of standing back there. It's not his fault. I know, you know, you and Felger, when I was on last Friday, felt like he'd been coached up by Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick, and that's why he was succeeding as a passer. But when you look at what Seattle gave up yesterday to Dak Prescott, 472, they've given up 450, 397, and 472 in three games. I'm very concerned about the Patriots' passing attack. I don't think it's very good outside of Edelman, and I don't think they have enough weapons.
Yeah, so that's what struck me too, Chris. It's hard not to look at that. But it felt to me like they manned up and the Patriots couldn't get open. And that is worrisome, because if it's that simple, teams will just play man-to-man against you. And if you can't get receivers open, then what?
It's a good point. And I'm actually going to go back to 2013, the last time, besides last year, when they completely left my boy Tom Brady out to dry with no weapons. But that was the last time before that I think they were sort of in this position. It was the year they had Aaron Dobson, Kembrell Tompkins, and Josh Boyce. And there was a game when Greg Schiano was the coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They had Darrelle Revis. And the wide receivers were struggling early in the year, Maz. And Tampa came in and played a lot of zone. And Tompkins and Dobson had pretty good days. And there was a reason for that. It was because against zone, a lot of times a young receiver who maybe struggles to get a release gets a free release against zone coverage. Well, what kind of team is Seattle? A zone team, cover three. Right. So when you're talking about N'Keal Harry and guys that were able to get open, and Demir Byrd's not a young guy, but it's easier to get open against a zone. And that cover three scheme is something that the Patriots have chewed up in the past. So to your point, now that people have seen what the Patriots receivers are, what they're dealing with outside of Edelman, the fact they're getting nothing out of the tight end position, I think that more teams are going to man them up and say, well, we're not going to give you a free release. You proved to us that you can get open.
And Chris, honestly, I'm not sure I'm all that confident that Edelman can beat man-to-man anymore.
Interesting.
So, yeah, and look, I'm not saying he's done, but I thought near the end of last year, I thought he was getting close. And now in the preseason, they've had to manage him. He's missed time. He's clearly got something going on with one of his knees. So they're going to have to figure something out there as they go against better teams. But look, you know, at the same time, I tell you, let's not underestimate the stupidity of the other 31 teams in the league. Seriously.
No, you're right. I mean, it's, I don't know how the Patriots do it. It's like they're conjuring some sort of, they cast some sort of spell on opponents, but these other teams are always so willing to be complicit in their own demise. And you just, you see it all the time. You're absolutely right. And that's funny. I'll say this, because I know you guys get on me about it. The quarterback has changed, but the Patriots' mystique, the aura, the ability to somehow Jedi mind trick the other team into shooting themselves in the foot, oh, it's still there 100%.
Well, because they got Yoda on the sideline. That's why. It's still Yoda. And look, I'll tell you, the game that I am interested in seeing after these first 3 weeks, I want to see them play Buffalo head-to-head and see how it looks. Buffalo, you know, Buffalo's still a young team. It looks like Josh Allen has improved. They look like they can throw now. I think they could run, and they have a good offensive line. And so I think that will be a good match for the Patriots. And you know, and there's some guys on that defense, obviously, probably the strength of the team. So those games, I think, will tell us a lot about really where the Patriots are, not just in the division, but in the landscape of the conference. And so the Buffalo games, to me, are going to be huge.
I'll tell you, I think this week's
Kansas
game
City, yeah,
against Kansas City is a big game. Obviously, defending Super Bowl champions. But what I want to see is, one, do the Patriots have enough explosive, dynamic offensive weapons to keep up? I thought Josh McDaniels really schemed up that running game. Your guy, Sony Michel, had a huge, huge day, 9 carries, 117 yards. But I didn't really think he did anything great. I thought they just schemed it up, and the offensive line was great. Yeah, I know you're not a big Sony Michel fan. The other thing is, this defense, I think right now, is living more off reputation than reality. They are susceptible. There are plays there to be made. I don't think this is the same shutdown defense we saw for the first half of last year. And teams can run the football against them. They're soft in the middle. What did Kansas City add in the offseason? a running back. They used their first round pick on LSU's Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think we're going to learn a lot about the Patriots in this Kansas City game, Az.
Well, Chris, and to your point, you'd never know it by the final score, okay? Because they beat the Raiders 36-20, and there's a garbage score at the end of that game. Maybe two, really. So let's take one away from each team. It's a 30-13 game, okay? In terms of the Patriots beating the Raiders. But the Raiders ran for 5.7 yards a rush, and Derek Carr had a quarterback rating of over 122.
Wow.
So you look at it and say, how did the Raiders get mauled in this game the way they did? And it's, again, it's because they're stupid. So this is where we always settle. So the brain power on the Patriots sideline obviously is still very, very good. But I happen to agree with you. I think the defense is a bit of a mirage. I didn't think they were particularly good yesterday. I think that the Raiders were able to exploit them, and again, they chewed them up right in the middle of the field. So how the Patriots deal with some of those teams, I don't know. And look, it's a thing that probably got hidden a little bit yesterday, but they did not play well defensively.
Yeah, I agree.
The secondary did. I'll give the secondary credit. Yep. But I thought their front seven got mauled again.
Yeah, it's been an issue. And can they keep up on the other side of the ball offensively with the Baltimores and the Kansas Cities, both of those teams on the schedule? I'm going to bring in Ellen here. Ellen, I'm just curious, because I think what we all want to know really is just, what did you think of Cam Newton's outfit yesterday? I know Maz is big into the sartorial analysis, but that bow tie, he seemed to be having some issues, Ellen, with the bow tie. But what did you think overall of his outfit game so far this season?
So the first game he wore yellow.
Yes, he did.
And killed it.
Yeah.
Won the game.
Yeah.
Second week he wore a very ill-fitting gray pinstripe jogger type suit. Okay. Lost. This week, powder blue, Kentucky Derby, Easter vibes.
Yep.
Won.
Okay.
I'm just saying there is a correlation between it all.
So you're saying, like, you know, pastels. Cam's a pastel passer. When he's in the pastels, the yellows, you know, the bright blues, then he's on his game. When he tries to go to something that's maybe a little more like Boardwalk Empire style, that's not really where it's at. He was having a hard time with that bow tie. I'll tell you, bow ties are not easy to tie. I wore one for my wedding. Cam's bow tie game is not tight.
Bow ties are very tricky, but I have a question for both of you, and I don't want to put you guys on the spot.
Go ahead.
But if you had to choose one hairstyle for the rest of your life, you only have two options.
Yeah.
It's Mark Davis.
Maz doesn't have a choice. Maz is he's going with the Michael Jordan.
Well, just imagine.
Or the Bruce Willis for Maz.
You could either have Mark Davis.
Okay.
Or Steve Belichick.
Ooh.
Oh, Steve Belichick, a million times over. Not even close. I'll take that mullet over that bowl cut that Mark Davis has every single time.
Do I get Mark Davis's bank account though if I take that haircut?
No. You're still the same exact person, same face, everything.
Okay, yeah, I'm with Maz. I'll take the Steve Belichick. I'll take the Steve Belichick look
too. Yeah, I'm with you guys.
No, totally. I would take that. I would just tell you that on the Cam outfits. I love the answer he gave after the yellow one, where he said we thought it was kind of an Easter Sunday vibe because, you know, what we're having in Foxborough this year is a resurrection.
Oh, yeah, a resurrection, a rebirth. Yeah,
which
I like that.
I could on multiple levels, not just him. The Patriots are having one too. I'm good with that.
That's a good point. Can't talk to Tony Maserati without talking some Red Sox here. I know it was a dismal season for the Red Sox. I think most of us tuned them out. They finished 24-36. Honestly, I think that it was merciful that no fans were allowed in Fenway this year. Yeah. I think that was an act of mercy by Major League Baseball and Governor Baker here in the Commonwealth. But I want to ask you, they moved on from Ron Renneke. That's not a surprise. Where do you see them going with the next manager?
So honestly, Chris, I don't have the slightest clue. I think they could go in any one of a million directions. I'm still eager to see how the whole Alex Cora thing pans out. Chaim Bloom to me has been sort of non-committal there. And I know a lot of people are saying he's staying away, but if they were staying away, why wouldn't they just come out and say, look, we're going to go in a different direction. This is not really where we're going to head. And so I think that part of it is they don't want to breach protocol or violate league rules. And that Cora is suspended. He's not supposed to talk to anybody until November 2nd, I think it is, or at least I saw that on Twitter yesterday. It might be the end of the World Series, but regardless, it feels to me like they have not slammed the door on that, and which tells me he's in play, or maybe they're having some internal discussion there. The season was a disaster. I mean, we all know that. It was a complete mess They ended up with the number four pick, which I suppose is a bit of a silver lining, presumably.
They should have gotten number three. This team couldn't even lose correctly. They won too many games down the stretch.
Now, you know what's going to happen is the first three players in the draft are all going to be good and everyone else is going to stink. That's what's going to happen. I'm already predicting that one. I can guarantee it, in fact. But to me, the managerial hiring, I'd like to see Cora come back personally. Because I think they need someone in that office with some presence and some personality for multiple reasons. But what it's going to tell me more than anything is how much juice Chaim Bloom really has.
Really? That's fascinating. That's very interesting. We all know how that usually works out. Ownership wins out. Last question for you here about the Red Sox. Just Andrew Benintendi, miserable season, got shut down, injured himself. I mean, I don't mean to laugh, but I mean, again, only the Red Sox. Injured himself, untouched, stumbling on the bases, landing on his ribs. Is his time here over? It certainly feels like Jackie Bradley Jr.'s is. Or Mookie Betts obviously got traded. And he talked about on a podcast with CC Sabathia that it didn't really sting that much. So it seemed like he was fine going. Seems like Jackie's fine going. Is Benintendi next?
To me, under perfect circumstances, you would move Benintendi. I think you can get something for him. The problem is his value is really, really low right now. And so my guess is he's going to be back because of that. And, Bloom, I think, probably will put a premium on getting his value up before they do move him, if they move him. He and Verdugo, to me, are similar, Chris. I view them as almost redundant. Long term, I mean, I would trade Benintendi when his value gets up and get some pitching in here.
All right, Maz. Well, we appreciate you joining us here. The one and only Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz, the most dominant sports talk show in the New England market. You guys are really the tastemakers. I know that my radio partner, Jim Murray, is very disappointed that there's not a season wrap-up edition of the Baseball Reporters to just really take a microscope to the Red Sox.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure he's devastated. I'll have you know, Murray hasn't done a Baseball Reporters show in spirit in the last month anyway. So what's the difference?
I mean, it literally seems like he is. I always used to call David Price a hardball hostage, Boston's favorite hardball hostage. Now I think it's Jim Murray.
Oh, gosh, please. He couldn't stand it. I'm surprised I didn't have to, tie him to the chair the last month of the season. But believe me, I'm not exactly upset that it's over either.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of us feel that way. Maz, thanks for lending your time and expertise. We really appreciate you joining us here on the Take 5 podcast.
Chris, anytime, you know that.
Hope you enjoyed this edition of the Take 5 podcast with my buddy Tony Maz. We appreciate you listening. You can find the podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate if you go on there, subscribe, and rate so other people can find the Take 5 podcast. We'll see you next time.